we're going to move to our last case for the day, which is the Glen Environmental Coalition versus Sea Island Acquisition. Okay, Mr. Brunini.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning. You sound a little distant, so you might want to turn it up or get closer to the mic one.
Okay, Your Honor, is that better?
Little.
Can you help with the volume?
That's good. That's better.
Okay, good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Your Honors, the issue before you today is whether the plaintiffs have standing to sue under the Clean Water Act citizen suit provision.
I view this case as a fairly simple case. I'll tell you, I'm very sympathetic to your argument in one respect that I think makes this case easy. And you tell me, there are a lot of arguments you make here, not all of which I find persuasive, but all you really need to do is make one. And you've got a client. The Supreme Court has told us that an aesthetic injury is an injury for standing purposes, so long as the individual uses the affected area and is a person for whom the aesthetic value of the area will be lessened by the challenged activity. That's Friends of the Earth, Supreme Court. An individual can meet that burden by establishing that the injury at the pleading stage by attesting that she uses an area affected by the alleged violations and that her aesthetic interests in the area have been harmed. That's what we've said in Black Warrior Riverkeeper. And you've got a client, Ms. Glenn, who says, or Ms. Frazier, who said, look, I use this area. I've seen this particular site where there's been a fill. I derived aesthetic pleasure from it before. Whether she actually stepped on it or not, I don't see is the point. And it's been harmed by the fill, and it's not as aesthetically pleasing anymore. And this is where I live. This is one of the reasons I live in this area. It seems to me that's enough.
Your Honor, we think that our first and best argument is the aesthetic injury sworn to by Jane Frazier in her affidavit. And we think it's very simple. The Supreme Court case you mentioned, Friends of the Earth versus Laidlaw, the Black Warrior case that you also referenced, and Gaston Copper, which was cited favorably by the 11th Circuit. What we have is a plaintiff, just as you stated, who testified in her affidavit that she regularly recreates in and enjoys the aesthetics of the wetlands and marshes, including the subject wetland that was filled. She also states that she drives by this particular location on a daily basis, and she enjoyed viewing that particular habitat, and that particular habitat is now gone based on a Clean Water Act violation by the defendants. We have always thought that that was the simplest and most direct route to
And it doesn't really matter if she previously did not derive pleasure from it, so long as she can't derive pleasure from it in the future. But she actually alleged that she had derived pleasure from it before.
That's correct. She's lived in the area for 25 years. She's visited the area for 25 years before that. She's purchased property based on these aesthetic interests. She's alleged that, that's as an 82-year-old person, her recreation includes enjoying the aesthetic beauty of the area. And so, as you mentioned, we think that alone is sufficient to establish standing. Also, we think that her interest in Dunbar Creek and viewing the aesthetic qualities and values of Dunbar Creek is also sufficient to establish standing. She's stated
she
as much
as she viewed this particular area that had been filled and had derived pleasure from viewing it in its natural habitat.
That's correct.
And more to Chief Judge Pryor's point, there's a little additional tidbit in the complaint, which is that she actually owns property and lives relatively nearby at the intersection of the park. So it's not as if she is a person, at least from the pleadings, who is, you know, visiting the area, you know, once a year or something like that, or once every 2 or 3 years, right, as a recreational tourist or something. She's an inhabitant of the area.
Yes, sir. Your Honor, we think that she's established an environmental interest that's been invaded in three different ways. The subject wetland, as Judge Pryor mentioned, Dunbar Creek, which she regularly drives over and has testified to recreating in. And also, as you mentioned, she and the Glen Environmental Coalition own a property interest in Tweedy Park, which is less than a third of a mile from the subject wetland. Our expert has testified that the activities of filling the subject wetland have resulted in a decreased habitat and wildlife in Tweedy Park, a property in which plaintiffs own an interest, and they used to observe aesthetic qualities that aren't there now, that have been diminished. So we think that those are three very clear routes to Article III standing. And I think it's important to note that.
And if she has it, then the associational standing inquiry totally changes. So all we have to address is her individual standing, vacate and remand.
That's correct, Your Honor. We didn't spend a lot of time on associational standing. We either qualify through Ms. Fraser's standing.
It changes the analysis for everything, right?
Agreed. We agree. We also think there's been a procedural injury here, which we have stated too in our...
We don't have to get to that, though, do we?
No, I don't think you do. And it's a particularly thorny issue. And
you might not win on it if we address it.
Well, then we should stay focused on keeping the main thing the main thing. Yes, sir. So I think it's also important to conclude or at least evaluate. You know, the district court, we think, got a little bit off track and required or sought additional factual information, you know, additional evidence, and more specific allegations. And I think it's important to consider that this case is before you guys on a motion to dismiss. This is not a summary judgment situation. In every case cited by the district court,
and every case cited, pleading stage, right?
Yeah, every case cited by the defendants and the district court in their pleadings, in the opinion and in their brief, was those cases were evaluated on a summary judgment standard. And again, we're here before you on a motion to dismiss. We think that's critical. We think that the facts need to be viewed in the light most favorable to the plaintiff.
You do have an affidavit, though.
We do. And we think that
that sort of just makes, at this stage, again, because nobody moved for summary judgment, it just makes a portions of your complaint akin to a verified complaint.
Agreed. And
this stage, that's all it really does, because nobody tested the veracity of your allegations through a summary judgment motion. That's for later in the proceedings.
That's correct, Judge Jordan. And I think, you know, this circuit has made clear in previous cases, some of them talking about procedural injuries such as Maransky, that when there's a motion to dismiss standard at play, you know, general factual allegations should suffice, and more specific allegations get to be brought out through the evidentiary process later. The court must presume that the general allegations in the complaint encompass the specific facts necessary to support those allegations. We think the district court required more than it should have required. And that's what the discovery process is going to bring forth. We may be back before this court fighting against a motion to dismiss that got granted, but that's for a later date.
You mean a motion to summary judgment?
I'm sorry.
I was just correcting him. I think he meant motion for summary judgment. We might be back.
Motion for summary judgment.
I actually think the complaint incorporating the affidavit allowed you to put a lot more detail in there that I think might even include some recreational harm. You've explained a good bit about the degrading of the water quality, the harm to wildlife in a way that's not hypothetical, but that's actual and imminent.
I agree. I think we have demonstrated actual harm through our expert affidavit and the testimony of, or the sworn affidavit of Ms. Fraser. She has stated that she recreates in and around the Dunbar Creek area, and that she has, you know, in her own eyes, experienced a diminution in water quality and experienced, you know, a decreased amount of wildlife and habitat. And I think, you know, the district court got a little sidetracked, and in the Black Warrior case, it was made clear that a plaintiff need not show that their injury can be traced to specific molecules of pollution emitted by the alleged polluter. It is enough that plaintiffs show that a defendant discharges a pollutant that causes or contributes to the kinds of injuries in the specific geographic area of concern. Those facts are testified to by Mr. Schweisberg in paragraphs 6 and 7 of his affidavit, that these are the kinds of effects that can be anticipated from the activity that occurred by filling the subject wetland.
He really goes further. He says it how bad it will be is what's unknown depending on the amount of rain, but it will be either, I think right. He says acute or chronic, but it will be one or the other.
Yeah. Well, that, to your point, Your Honor, that reflects, you know, an actual harm that has already occurred and an imminent harm that is likely to occur in the future based on the kind of activity that was undertaken.
So long as it rains.
I think we can anticipate that. My time is running short. I'll pause here and allow.
You take 4 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Durant.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. Let me initially state, I've heard what has been said and want to address it. The Supreme Court in the cases has made clear that you have to show an injury in fact that is concrete and particularized and actual or imminent, not conjectural or hypothetical. And when we talk about concrete and particularized, it has to be to the individual and that an actual harm has been suffered.
All right, you got Ms. Frazier.
Well, you've got Ms. Frazier's affidavit, but Ms. Frazier's affidavit, as you read the various paragraphs and go through the various paragraphs, talks about not that she has visited this, if we're talking about the subject wetland, first of all, that she has visited the subject wetland. She talks about the fact that it is no longer there and it is aesthetic and such property would be aesthetically.
She says in paragraph 7 on page 2 that before the fill that she had derived aesthetic pleasure from this wetland, which she described as a pleasing natural resource, and from other similar wetland habitats in this county by viewing the area in its natural habitat. And that wetland, the one that's the subject of this litigation, has been replaced by unnatural grassed areas that are less aesthetically pleasing, which means that she's seen it before and after. How is that not concrete, individual, particularized, Mr. Durham?
Well, Your Honor, the fact that she states that she has seen it is concrete. She has not addressed nothing's been addressed about it being conjectural, actual, or imminent.
How does, Mr. Durham, in an aesthetic injury context, how do you allege, not prove, how do you allege more in a pleading when you're dealing with aesthetic harm? Because aesthetic harm is already sort of difficult to wrap your head around. But as Chief Judge Pryor said, the Supreme Court has said that aesthetic injury, as long as you have the right allegations, can suffice for Article III standing. So what else does a person like Ms. Frazier need to allege to have aesthetic injury at the pleading stage?
Understanding what Your Honor is saying, that basically means that anytime a subject wetland is removed, that it's always going to be sufficient standing in order to bring such a lawsuit.
No, because you have to be someone who either has or is going to deprive aesthetic pleasure from it. She says she lives nearby. She derived pleasure before because she drove by it, observed it. She says she moved to the area because of its environmental offerings. She says that now, according to the alleged violation of the Clean Water Act, that the wetland has diminished. It has hurt the wildlife and habitat, et cetera. I'm not sure that that's speculative and conjectural.
She says it's less aesthetically pleasing, which from which I would infer reasonably, I think, that she has seen it again after the fill, and she has seen that it is less pleasing. What more do you need?
I understand the court's position on that. Obviously, there were other aspects they talked about as far as Dunbar Creek and driving past and water clarity, but at no point does it say that can say how that in any way had damaged her. She did not say talk about aesthetically pleasing.
She said she observes Dunbar Creek on a daily basis. This is paragraph 8. As she drives over it, and that she's noticed a significant difference in water clarity in Dunbar Creek, right?
Yes, the Tidal Creek, yes.
It also says that the water quality has been confirmed to be diminished because of the fill, according to people who are monitoring the creek.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that the complaint, the paragraph in the complaint that talks about it being diminished says directly traces it back to the subject wetland.
It says it's contributing
it
to it.
It says it occurred. It said it happened afterwards. After the subject wetland was taken, that's when they notice it, as I recall what was said in that paragraph. I think that was in paragraph 48.
It says the filling of the wetland is a contributing factor to the diminished water quality.
Okay. In paragraph 48, it said there was no, that the reference by GHGC states Dunbar Creek's water quality is diminished. But I understand what you're stating. Obviously, there is a motion to dismiss pending on all the substantive claims that exist in the case. There's the motion to dismiss also exists as to the fact that we contend that she does not have and that the plaintiffs do not have a cause of action under the Clean Water Act, which was
the district court can settle out those questions. I mean, what we have here is a jurisdictional dismissal that if in error, we ought to vacate and remand so the district court can take the first crack at those issues, right?
Understand, Your Honor. And that would still be, it would not go as to constitutional standing, but clearly as to whether there is a provision in the statute that does in fact allow her.
Yeah, I have no idea about the merits of all of that, but I also don't want to be the first to try to figure it out.
Understand. With that said, Your Honor, I will, based upon what I've heard and what's been argued, I mean, we can argue the various allegations that are made, but I understand the court's position at this point, and I'll concede my time.
Thank you, Mr. Durham. I appreciate that. Mr. Bernini, I guess the question for you is, do you really think anything more needs to be said? You're muted, by the way. You're still muted.
All right, we're back. Based on everything I've heard, Your Honor, it's always wise for a good lawyer to know when to stop talking, or I might. So thank you for your time. We can see the rest of our time.
A great lawyer does that. Thank you, Mr. Bernini. So that's our last case for today. We appreciate your arguments, and we are adjourned.